We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. It is a post-first round edition as the NFL draft first night, which seems like it takes forever to get here, comes and goes quite quickly, more than you'd think of like a four-hour first round would take. It is over in the blink of an eye. The Browns, as we all presumed, did not get involved in any way, shape, or form, but there are fun talking points to hit on for what happened in the first round of the NFL, and then obviously looking ahead at what the Browns could potentially do on day two. And I thought no better person to bring in than Ian Valentino, who's put in a ton of work at various spots. Ian has been this draft cycle, but has put in as much work as anybody covering this thing and has done great stuff for us at the OBR when we've asked him to. So perfect fit to have this conversation. Ian, what's up, man?
Yeah, man. Thanks. Really appreciate being on. And this whole cycle, OBR has been awesome. And yeah, I mean, it was kind of nice, like from a Browns perspective. I mean, obviously you want a first round pick, but at the same time too, it was like kind of cool to just watch the chaos unfold and not be part of it and be caught up in some of the interesting picks that were happening, especially as we hit the 20s, the 30s. So yeah, man, a lot of talent left on the board. Really good situation, I think, for these teams entering day two.
Well, let's start with the biggest chaotic moment, which everything, you know, to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong here a little bit, Ian, but everything is, and I don't know, maybe this got away from me a little bit building up to the draft, but it feels like there's less and less available publicly because of the gambling and all of that. So that leads people to think there's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors. Really, these teams kept it a lot of what we presumed. And I think that we can build this up as like this big thing is going to happen, these big trades, whatever. The trades and the early picks, the first two or three selections, usually happen weeks in advance because teams, you know, have an idea that they want to get out of that selection and they make that deal and they don't want to be up against a clock making a huge decision there. So the idea that the Patriots or even perhaps the Commanders were going to trade would have been executed well before. And then you see a lot of the selections go according to plan or very close to plan. And it's like, I think we're building this up to be something it's not anymore, largely because teams are becoming smarter at the peripherals of drafting. They're not doing crazy, ludicrous trades anymore that involve giving up insane amounts of capital because they've gotten smarter in the analytics departments. Teams teaching their guys running drafts, here's how it goes in terms of trade value points, and here's how we don't get robbed. And like, I think everybody's getting smarter, which leads to less drama, is my point. And like all of that cumulative effect leads to this big buildup that's usually kind of like, not melodrama, but like, it's just not the crazy event that we sort of build it up to. Am I on to something there, Ian, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think especially at the top, like, I think that's absolutely right. You know, we saw a lot of love for, I mean, every year it's with these quarterbacks, like,
right.
And obviously we had a shocker tonight, but it's interesting to me that the media is consistently getting the rising quarterback wrong. And it's not to say like McCarthy wasn't a riser. Like he still goes top 10, which is great for him. And it's great for his family, obviously. But it's just interesting to me that like he gets billed as a potential number two pick. Like we were hearing that today or, you know, right, over the last, you know, 72 hours. It's like, I don't think he was ever in the mix to go in the top three. Like, I'm sure teams considered him. Yeah, of course they did their homework on him. But yeah, I think you're right. I do think that there's a part in the draft, and we'll get to some of these teams. But I do wonder with some of these teams where if they're getting smarter, but I almost wonder if they're getting too smart for themselves. And we'll get into some of those, I'm sure. But I do think like the drama within the top seven picks was non-existent. And if you'd have looked back at mocks back in January, I bet we were a little bit closer back then than what we were probably 24 hours ago.
I think that's more than fair. We start to overthink it a little bit. And again, like obviously trading out of pick 17 or 28 or whatever takes a little less thinking than it does the ramifications of moving out of the second or third pick. Whereas like the Patriots know they're going to get either Jaden Daniels or Drake May, and they're fine taking one of those two if there's some big upset that happens there. But again, I think this is something we need to remember as cycles go forward, is like those trades happen days in advance, weeks in advance, sometimes a month in advance. If it doesn't happen, it's very unlikely that you're going to see that type of thing. Now, you could see picks outside of the top five, even, you know, like 6, 7, 8 kind of feel the starting point, but like most of the time teams are going to maybe move up one pick, like we saw Minnesota move up to get their quarterback, right? So it's just a little thing to remember. And to your point about like drafts in January probably being as at least as accurate, it talks to the fact that we're spending time talking about very little imminent information. And when you're making like draft takes, and this is me, these are people in the industry trying to do this, you have to be careful speaking in like definitive language here, because you don't know. You have no idea. And then like acting like you know for sure this is going to happen, it feels like there's always going to be a pie in the face, because it just comes back to bite. Like, how many people had Ricky Pearsall going in the first round? And it's like you don't know. And you're placing your definitive feelings about a prospect on the whim of a team that just likes this wide receiver for this role to do this specific thing. And it's a trickier buildup than ever, right? It's a trickier buildup than ever. And I think the thing that you said that is very accurate there is some teams are getting perhaps a little too smart or trying to overthink it. And maybe we saw that here with the Falcons, because that's when we saw the holy cow moment of the draft, right? We're going to talk about the six quarterbacks that go. Maybe you know off the top of your head, Ian, if that's a record, it might be a record, but at least as early as they went is up there with an all timer. But I mean, I don't even know where to start, man. Like you quite clearly, based on what Kirk Cousins' agent and what his people around him are saying, that he had no clue this was coming. So I understand that a team does not have to tell a guy on the roster everything, but it feels to me, Ian, again, and I want you to step in and tell me if you know more about the process than I do, you have to do months and months and months of homework on a quarterback to take him 8th overall. You got to be thinking about this hard. So you didn't disclose that to Kirk when you signed him, because Kirk wouldn't have come to Atlanta if you did that. And I feel like the Falcons, whatever Penix turns into, I'm not here to define his career, whatever. I understand people have takes on him. We'll see. But they did a severe amount of damage to players' opinions of the franchise and their honesty to their players tonight. I just think they did. They really hurt themselves there. What do you think about it?
Yeah, and I think the shocking part of that is we're only a couple years removed from them doing it to Matt Ryan.
That's correct.
Like, with the Deshaun Watson thing. Like it, and I understand, like, I'm not here to sit here to say, like, hey, they shouldn't have gone after Watson. I think it was smart to go after Watson. Ryan was clearly almost done and was done shortly after. But, like, to do that to a franchise legend, really, was disrespectful. It was. And I know that Cousins doesn't have that cachet, but it's also a bit nonsensical. And I think it's disingenuous to look at Cousins and say, hey, we're going to bring you here. We're bringing in a head coach who we believe can turn things around quickly. And then we're going to spend our premium draft asset when we have no viable pass rusher on the roster. We don't have a number two corner on the roster. And we have our choice of whatever we want defensively, or even potentially trade down. And we're going to take a guy who's not going to play, unless, you know, barring injury, at least 2 years, if not 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I know that it worked out for Jordan Love in Green Bay, but that situation was different too. Rodgers, they were thinking that he was going to be declining, and he was starting to go down that hill, and then he bounced back before. Obviously, we saw what happened there, but
and at least he had the experience of going through that himself. Like he knows the franchise thinks that way. I just feel like Kirk had to be so blindsided by that. And it's not like you're taking a quarterback in the second round who it's like, yeah, man, we got an idea that this is the eighth pick. You sitting here for, I mean, Jordan Love was what, 27th overall or something like that. I can't recall the specific number, but a top 10 asset has to find the field in their rookie contract relatively early to meet some of the value here. So, I mean, back to you on that. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's just kind of wild to me. You're making such a great point about what they need to cash in on this window of a cheap set of skill players still in Pitts and London and Bijan. And like, this is so, it's such a curveball, man.
Yeah. And it's not like they're your usual rebuilding team. Like your usual rebuilding team has a bunch of cap space and they're healthy. The Falcons are just coming off of a time where they had a bunch of huge cap hits and numbers, and they're a little bit healthier now, but signing Cousins really takes that away. So their margin for error is small. It's pretty shocking. And like you said, they knew this was coming. There was some buzz that they would take him in the second round. I don't think anybody was thinking that anybody would take Penix before maybe Las Vegas got really desperate
at 13.
That's
the point too. They felt like they reached.
Oh my gosh. And like, and it's not anything about Penix. It's just the reality of like, and maybe he turns out, but like special shout out to the guy in my Twitter mentions that brought up Steve Young hitting the field at 31. Really applicable situation there.
Yeah, totally.
But man, he's the reincarnate. But it's baffling, and you don't feel bad for Kirk, right? Because he walks out of this with $90 million guaranteed and he'll be just fine. But it's more of about like what's on the line, and this is the thing that could define an entire regime. Like this could be sure, maybe it turns out great. And if Michael Penix wins a Super Bowl at 29, no one cares. But there's a process to it, and there's a process to this thinking, and it reflects directly in your decision making. And there was no real thought here. It's they should have told Kirk at some point. They should have planned for this, or else honestly, don't sign Kirk. You drafted a 24-year-old quarterback. Just roll Michael Penix out onto the field, save your $45 million a year, and use it somewhere else. Like it's just very strange to me thinking it like that. Like you're not really benefiting from having two quarterbacks on the roster like that. Not saying you can't have you want a bum behind Kirk, especially coming off of an injury, but there's no reason to invest that heavily.
I the reach on top of it, man, if you were saying like, we really want McCarthy here because you know, it feels like he's in demand from some teams behind you, it makes a little bit more sense. I one of the more mystifying selections in recent draft history. I mean, I'm not good at the history of the draft and just knowing it right off the top of my head, but that one is pretty jarring for a top 10 selection.
An interesting part too, like that made me think of, it's like if they would have taken McCarthy and turned around and tried to trade him, I wonder what they would have been able to get as opposed to Penix.
I know. Or just moving out of that spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's a crazy one. Absolutely crazy. How do you feel about Bo Nix going 12? I mean, again, the Broncos are in a very weird franchise spot. I don't know how you had him graded. It feels like the Penix and Nix stuff was like, these guys were second day players for a lot of people. So it's a big reach. It probably speaks to where the NFL is. And again, more than ever before, pure desperation mode for these guys to work out. But I think a lot of people were like, the Broncos and Bo Nix, you could see it being a thing, and you get all of the post selection hype about they put them on the whiteboard, three different pamphlets and all of that. I just don't have a good feeling about that spot, man.
Yeah. I like Nix, but I like him in terms of like, I think he's probably going to be an average quarterback in the NFL. And what does that mean for someone like Denver? And you've got the coach there that basically ran the Oregon offense last year for Russell Wilson, and he looked somewhat passable. And I think his thought is, well, I can do the same thing with Bo Nix and hopefully get him to marry the film between Auburn and Oregon and find the blend of playmaker with game manager. And at least with Nix, he's got the athleticism. He's got a big arm. There's some stuff to work with there. It's enough for the NFL to like these guys. I didn't think it was egregious. He had a day two grade for me, but those guys get moved up. So I don't think that, especially in their situation, like I'm not surprised. I thought that they were the one team where it was like, well, you kind of have to take them. Like maybe you could trade down, but at the same time, I don't think teams were really itching to trade up. We didn't see a whole lot of trade ups in that range. So, you know, I think it's fine. But are they going to make the mistake of like Miami, which is potentially a mistake, or even, you know, what is San Francisco going to do with Brock Purdy? Like,
right.
I think that's where like the pivotal point comes, where it's like, if these guys still have jobs, do you pay them? Yeah, I don't know. If I was Miami, I probably would have tried to take Bo Nix as opposed to paying Tua, because I just think that like guys like that are kind of replaceable. But at the same time too, like, that's cutting edge. People don't do that. That's very, very, very aggressive for what the NFL does. So I was okay with it. But once you saw Penix go, then it was like, oh, Nix has to go, you know, within the next like five, six picks.
Not sure this is the group skilled enough to be the one to go with six inside the top 12 here, right? So nonetheless, we get it, and it's probably a look into the future of what this is going to ultimately look like as teams try to shuffle through. And you're right, it might be a more cutting-edge thing where teams are saying, we don't want to pay, like, we like Tua, he's fine, but we're not paying him. And then you start to shuffle through another one every 5 years until you find the right solution for you that you feel comfortable dumping a couple $100 million into it. So that is a trend to very much keep track of. I want to do some things with you here, because I think we'll end up hitting on a lot of the talking points. Your three favorite fits, like picks from this draft. So your three that you just absolutely loved.
Yeah. So, I mean, outside of like the top like six, because those guys are, it's pretty easy when you're lined up with those guys.
Right.
I really liked Quinyon Mitchell to the Eagles. I thought Mitchell was a guy, he should have been in play at number eight. I thought he was, if not the pick at number eight, probably their second choice for Atlanta. He falls all the way to 22 for Philadelphia. Philadelphia, I know, was interested in trading up for him. They needed secondary athleticism so badly, and he brings it to the table. Just such a good fit in terms of scheme. They can immediately rotate him in with two veterans that probably need to be spelled at this point. Neither Darius Slay nor James Bradbury are, in my opinion, like high-end starters anymore. So Mitchell, really, I mean, the Eagles just do that every single year. They seem to find these values. Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. I cannot believe that the Buffalo Bills traded again with the Kansas City Chiefs and then gave him someone that they've been lacking for the last couple of years.
You're right.
Just an unbelievable, like, I just feel like Buffalo looked at the trade compensation. So like, you look at what Minnesota traded to get to Jacksonville's spot was like a fifth round pick or something. And then the Bills got like a third round value for like four picks. But like, when you get that type of offer, you better look and be like, who are you actually going to take? Because is it worth us getting a third round pick for this guy to, you know, beat our butt next year? So just a, kind of a head scratching decision for them. I don't mind them trading out of the first round. I don't mind them passing out. It's not that they needed to take Worthy, but to do it to the Chiefs and set them up like that, just kind of, I think that was kind of short-sighted.
I don't know. Graham Barton, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I would say I don't know if Xavier Worthy becomes the next DeSean Jackson here. I'm not sure. I'm not saying that is not going to happen. It is. I don't. We'll see what his career ultimately becomes. But I mean, Ian, we're talking maybe the greatest Madden team you've ever seen here, with like Marquise Brown's speed and his speed. You're talking like, if you're a video game guy, I mean, this is your team, because you're talking 99, pure 99 overall rating right in the first year. Like, this is what he's going to do. He's going to be a speed guy for them the same way Marquise is. And then if Rashee Rice, we'll see what ultimately happens with his suspension and where that lands. It might even be pushed out another year. Who knows with the process? But like, that's going from what they had last year to this group now, it is, you know, and again, Worthy's maybe he's some development that can happen. You can't put him in certain positions. You don't want him getting jammed up. There's going to be spots you can't throw him on the field, but they're chasing a trait they feel like they have immensely mixed. Ever since Tyreek left, like, you're missing that guy. I mean, you can only go so far with the Marcus Valdes-Scantling and some of the things he's limited, ball tracking, stuff like that. Like, he's not going to be asked to come in and recreate the wheel with a route concept. Like, he's going to be, hey, man, give me some nines, give me some posts, give me some double moves at the top of a 20-yard stem, and, like, go chase down Patrick Mahomes' deep shots. Like, that's it, and lift the lid and give us some answers for Travis and these guys underneath. And, like, that fit – like, Worthy doesn't probably work with a lot of teams, but this is the team that it's like, man, it is a chance, like the best possible chance for him to work out.
Yeah, you can just see it now. Like, when Mahomes breaks the pocket, especially against zone coverages, it's just like, that's exactly why Tyreek did so well there. I mean, Tyreek's, you know, another level, but Worthy is as close as you're going to get. And he's such a good player with the ball in his hands. The last thing you want to cede to the Chiefs is easy production.
Right.
This guy creates easy production. Just get the ball in his hands on a crosser and he's electric. So yeah, I think you're right though. He needed to go to one of these spots, and then it's like, well, that's probably not the spot that anyone in the AFC wanted to see him go. Yeah. So yep. Tough one there for the Bills. Another Bills loss, but that's their franchise. The other one I would say is Graham Barton for the Buccaneers. I didn't think the Buccaneers had a ton of major holes entering tonight. I thought cornerback made sense, but I was looking at the offensive line, especially for Baker Mayfield. Their run game was terrible last year.
Yeah.
And even the year before, they've been struggling for a couple of years. And so remaking that line is going to help a lot. Barton makes so much sense. I thought Miami, I thought they were going to take him. They passed him up. We'll talk about that. But Barton, play center, play guard, whatever they want him to do, he'll step in at a high level right away. And all of a sudden you look at that team, it's like, well, you know, if they do something here on day two, maybe add another playmaker, especially with the health of Chris Godwin being a little bit in question. I think he's lost a little bit of a explosiveness. If they can add like another playmaker and Baker plays, you know, how he did last year, which was fine.
Yeah.
That team is going to be competitive once again and be even more solid. And that's kind of their calling card, is like, they don't have a ton of weaknesses.
Right. Again, Baker needs interior line to be solidified in some fashion, right? It can't be three leaky interior players with him, because he needs to be able to find passing windows that those types of guys can survive on islands and create. Right. So I'll just add to that. And it'll be funny if we cross over into some fits that you didn't like, maybe that I did like. Obviously Romo Dunze to the Bears is like, it's like a home. I mean, it's as big a home run for a team, I think, as you could find in terms of not having to move out of nine, landing that wide receiver. I'll ask you this. Is this the best situation a first overall pick quarterback has landed in? I have to think that it's at least there. It's there with the Andrew Luck stuff, probably better.
Yeah. So I actually did an article on that earlier this offseason, and it's hard because like the hindsight thing where Houston last year ends up being a great situation because of Tank Dell. They have an offensive coordinator who tunes into a head coaching candidate after 1 year. So I thought Houston, their offensive line was really good. They didn't have a running game until they played Devin Singletary, but once they played him, they had a pretty good running game. I actually thought Houston last year was pretty strong. Yeah, but it's right up there, and especially adding Adunze. And I think he is – I'm not even like super-duper high on Adunze. I like him. I think he's a solid first-round guy. But – that's the quarterback that he needed, and that's the wide receiver that Caleb Williams needed, because Caleb Williams never had that at USC. He had Brendan Rice, who is like a Dollar General version of Romo Dunze, but doesn't move like him, doesn't track the ball. He's not a football player. Like, Romo Dunze is a football player, and that's going to be electric, and especially to give him Keenan Allen now, too. I worry a little bit about the offensive line, but at the same time, too, like, this team earned like the ninth pick in the draft. Like, it's not going to be a perfect unit. And I thought that their choice between an offensive lineman and a wide receiver probably came down to like, just, okay, well, what are the actual players? I thought Adunze might be off the board already too. I thought Atlanta might have made more sense for him. And then obviously they did what they did. But yeah, you can't say much. I mean, you can't really use the excuse for Caleb Williams next year that, oh, it's a bad team. It's like, well, if nothing else, he's got playmakers. Just get the ball out. If the offense is somewhat functional, those guys should be pretty productive.
Yeah, he's got a chance to just, you know, that defense I thought came on so strong at the end of the year, and bring a lot of those pieces back, and obviously adding weapons, a wide receiver, go with Cole Kmet, and DeAndre Swift is, you know, it's an improvement on what they were putting on the field last year. That much is for certain. So we'll see how they navigate the youngster and like, this team should maybe make the playoffs. That's a different sort of expectation for a first pick, right? So obviously there's some good selections that made plenty of sense in terms of like Byron Murphy. Thought that one made some sense quite clearly to Seattle, and then Dallas Turner. But the ones that I really, really liked, I thought the Lions move to go up and get Terrion Arnold was really good in terms of value, and in terms of like, if they would have put this group on the field at corner next year, I'd have been pretty concerned for them. So I like that one. And then my third one, which might be one that you don't like, I think it's his opinions of him are a little all over the board, but I really liked Ricky Pearsall. So like, I understand he's older. I really like him. And I think that he's the type of like, you know, if they entertain whatever Ayuk's outcome turns into, ultimately a guy who can move in motion, who can be an off the ball move around receiver, who you can get a little funky with, and some of that Kyle Shanahan motion stuff, and is so smooth. I know he doesn't break a ton of tackles, but he's very smooth getting out of the cuts that offense requires, and the timing based stuff. And like, that one's probably pretty jarring that it happened for a lot of people who have several people like the Keon Coleman's and AD Mitchell's and Ladd McConkey's in front of him. But as far as like a fit goes, I think that it makes plenty of sense to me. But I don't know how you felt about Ricky, because I think Ricky is probably the one that nobody thought was going to happen.
I had that down as one of my least favorites, and it's not because of the fit. For me, it's a bigger philosophical discussion with San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and I love Kyle Shanahan, but the one thing that drives me nuts is the guy is all about a scheme, and he's got a heck of a scheme. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes you got to break your scheme, or you have to grow your scheme. And we talked about this earlier throughout the entire offseason with the Browns, right? Like, mm-hmm. you have to evolve and you have to push yourself to continue to change. And I think this was the comfortable pick. This really reminded me of when Washington took Jahan Dotson in the first round.
Yeah.
And it just, the talent's not there. Like, Dotson's a nice player. He was a middle of the day two talent. Same thing with Pearsall. He's an older guy, and that doesn't play a huge part in it, but like it is part of the small evaluation. And for me, he's going to be productive. He's going to fit what they do. He's going to create some explosive plays. Could you have gotten him around later, or could you have gotten an equivalent around later? Are you going to trade Deebo Samuel? I think on day two, that makes more sense to trade Samuel. You're not going to trade Ayuk now, unless it's for a 2025 pick. But like, you know, I think Samuel is definitely on the block. You can't really pay both those receivers. So
yeah,
I just look at that pick, and I wish they would have done, if you're going to take that archetype, take Ladd McConkey. If you're going to take someone who is going to transcend the offense or replace one of the guys that you have, you could have replaced Deebo with another South Carolina guy, Xavier Leggett, or maybe you could have really changed the offense's identity or waited, change the offense's identity with something like a speedster, like Troy Franklin and Adonai Mitchell. And I understand, like, it's not as simple as saying, you know, oh, just take this player.
Right.
They need to fit a scheme and a role. But at the same time, I just think that they're so scheme dependent and they're so rigid. I just hate that when teams get that closed-minded, and I thought that they were a victim of their own selves. But he's gonna be good there. I mean, it's not that. It's just, you know. And at the end of the day, come fall, it doesn't really matter. It's like it's one of those weird things where like you're balancing it out to say like, well, if he puts up 5 touchdowns and 600 yards a year, and he's efficient for them, and that's what they want out of him, yeah, it might look silly taking him in the first round, but like, that does fit a role for them. It's an affordable contract for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
They're not great at evaluating receivers. That's part of it too. Like, they missed on Danny Gray last year. They've missed on a couple of guys that they've tried to add. They're good at finding like these late rounders or undrafted guys, but none of those guys can ever withstand a bigger role. And so I can understand that he's an upgrade on those type of talents.
Yeah. There's absolutely no denying that Kyle and McVay have guys, they have guys types they like to fit in. Breaking the mold of some of those. Like, I'm with you on that. It'll be interesting to see if they ever start doing that, because I just think when I saw that Ricky was the pick, I'm like, that adds up. 1 + 1 on that one. It's kind of the same with Xavier Worthy. They just, some guys are drawn to certain types of coaches, and it kind of bends that way. Let's talk. Give me a couple more of the fits you didn't like, and then I want to ask you about a couple specific ones before we take a break.
Yeah, so Brian Thomas Jr. to the Jags. I actually think it's a good fit. In terms of what they needed, verticality. They could use size. Zay Jones, you know, probably in his last year there. Overall, that unit besides Christian Kirk it's just not dynamic. So I understand like the mindset there is you take the big fast guy. The problem with the big fast guy is the big fast guy doesn't know how to play football outside of running slot goes. Like, he doesn't run anything else. He's not great at coming back to the football. He's not super physical. He's not very aggressive. He's going to outrun people. And he's very good at that. And him and Christian Kirk can run some cool vertical routes together. But that's not really Trevor Lawrence's strength. He was not an overly accurate deep thrower in college. That hasn't really changed the NFL. That's part of the reason why Calvin Ridley struggled last year. And look at Thomas's ability to break press. Calvin Ridley faced the second most press attempts by defenders last year. Is Brian Thomas Jr. the guy to break it? Well, he looks like it. He doesn't play like it. If you wanted a guy that was going to go up and get that ball, I think Keon Coleman was a little bit of a better fit. Thomas is raw. He could pay off in a big way. And then, you know, I may just end up eating this. Like, he may just blow my expectations away. But he was a one-year guy, and he shows it. Like, and it's from a very simplistic system. So they're going to have to ease him in. That's okay as long as they're okay with that. But like, when you're talking about a team that should really be competing to win every single year. If you think that you have that franchise quarterback, I just thought that they should have probably stood pat. They barely took anything in that trade down. They could have done better on that trade too. So I didn't love it. I get the theory of it, but I don't think he's the classic guy that busts. Like, we've seen so many of those guys not work out.
Right.
Be more of a Martavis Bryant or Sammy Coates. So I think he's pretty risky. And then I would look at Chop Robinson to Miami. I like Chop, but Chop is just like the other Ravens pass rushers. And Miami just hired the defensive coordinator, their new defensive coordinator from the Ravens. I'm just blanking on his name, but he was from Penn State too. And with the Ravens there, and he's a PFF guy. He's a pressures king. It's like, I don't care about the pressures, man. Like, that stuff's not super valuable. It's been proven that half of these quarterbacks in the NFL thrive as soon as you get pressure on them because they break the pocket and it breaks the defense. Mm-hmm. So Chop's got to finish. And Miami took a guy with 9 sacks over the last 2 years. Now, I understand that they have major injuries at both edge positions, so you kind of have to hedge against that. And Chop does bring a really cool skill set. He's so fast off the ball, but they've got to work on this. And Miami's missed on these guys. Chris Greer's been there, the GM, for like 20 years, and he misses on these guys. He missed on Charles Harris, missed on Deion Jordan. Chop's kind of in that same, he's a different player, right? But it's the mold of saying, we're going to take a guy with this thing that we think is a trait, but he doesn't actually make the impact play. And that really bothers me, especially at the edge position. There's a reason why he's not making those plays. And it's kind of plagued Miami throughout the years. I thought that they overlooked the need at offensive line. When you have Tua, it's a lot like Baker Mayfield. When you have Baker, like you said, got to have a great interior. What does Miami have? Well, they've got like a UDFA at guard who's basically never played.
Right.
They're going to have the chance to add somebody day two, but like, they needed to really invest in this offensive line. And I think Chop's a bit of a luxury. To win, you need both those guys that were hurt last year, Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. Chop's not going to step in and play over those guys next year when they're healthy, or even the year after. He's going to be a rotational guy. And that's just being stuck on to say, well, I'm either going to take tackle, edge, or corner. And that's the problem. Like, you can't be that rigid. It goes right back to the San Francisco thing. If you're going to be that rigid with these premium positions, you're never going to really get ahead. You're just going to be stockpiling talent that's a rotational player.
Yeah, and then you, too, look at, like, they lost Christian Wilkins. And, you know, I think Chop brings a lot of rush versatility. You can get creative with him, especially when the other two are back. But how do you defend the run for a while? And especially with Jerzon Newton kind of sitting, I know that he's not necessarily a run stopper by nature, but you certainly look at like you trying to replace some of that talent lost by Wilkins, and it was kind of an easy fit to see. So I'm with you on that. There's a couple other spots that stand out to me as far as like, that's interesting. Brock Bowers to the Raiders. Peculiar. I mean, I guess they're going to have like Aiden O'Connell throwing to tight ends. Like, I like Brock. I'm sure. How do you think that he fits with May, or do you like that or not? I mean, I don't know. It's a weird one.
Well, it's kind of disrespectful that you said Aiden O'Connell and not Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, that's true.
The mustache, that's
true, man. I keep forgetting he did arrive there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll work. Is Devontae Adams going to be there next year? I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be there in the fall. Or past the trade deadline. To me, he seems like a guy that might want out. But if he's there, then the only clunky thing, I mean, I could see it depends, right? You have to be the right offensive mind. You have to look at like the Patriots to say, all right, we're going to use Brock Bowers as Aaron Hernandez. And if you use him in that role and then you keep Michael Mayer more as like the inline guy or a little bit more of like the Gronk, I think that makes sense and you can do that. They also have, who's the other receiver that they have? They signed him from the Patriots and he was pretty decent last year, but he's another guy that plays in the slot. Oh, Jacoby Myers. There he plays us in the slot a lot. So you've got this weird kind of dichotomy where it's like, well, Bowers is going to play in the slot a lot too. And Mayer can play in the slot. And so when you do that, the onus is really on the offensive coordinator to be just making a point to continue to get these guys in position to succeed without being so just so obvious about it. And so I like it in the terms of like, they probably didn't expect the board to fall the way that it did. They didn't really need a defensive player as much. Their defense played pretty well last year. Could they have used, you know, maybe a cornerback? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Quinion Mitchell would have probably been my pick there, but like Bowers to me is the highest rated guy. So I don't want to knock that too much. It's just kind of awkward when they don't have the quarterback already.
Right.
Could they have taken a wide receiver? Maybe, but again, though, Bowers was way higher rated for me than, you know, Brian Thomas. So I don't dislike it. It is clunky, though, in the short term. The right quarterback and right offensive coordinator probably get you there, but those are probably the two biggest question marks on the team.
Yeah. Luke Getsy, show us what you got again, right?
Good luck.
Right, and I think that the Colts were probably hoping that Bowers fell to them, and then they had to alter course. They go Lott, who maybe should have gone corner. I don't know. It's tricky for them. They needed both of those. The other one that I thought was a sort of pivotal point in the draft was the Chargers not taking Malik Nabers, going Joe Alt. We'll finish this one here before break. Like, I mean, are they going to regret that? I feel like they're going to regret that. I would have been pounding the table for wide receiver there for me personally, considering what that room looks like. They just spent a premium pick on a tackle last year or the year before last. I can't remember when they drafted Slater, but like, I don't know, man. You need to give your, I understand you want to run the ball like it's 1962 again, but like, I have a feeling this is one we're going to look at and just kind of shake our head at.
So the part of the reason why I was pretty steadfast in thinking they were going to take a tackle is look at the remaining guys on the board right now. And if the Chargers were on the clock at 33, their best tackle option is probably Patrick Paul. And their best wide receiver option is either Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey, or Adonai Mitchell. So I think this was really made in a combination. I think they looked at this and they said, there's going to be a huge offensive line run. We need an offensive lineman for sure. The question is, do you take him at 5, and which elite player do you take? If you, they obviously viewed them, you know, very similarly graded.
Right.
I think I prefer what they did because you're going to be more likely to hit on the receiver in the second round. I mean, man, Nabers is good. And putting him with Justin Herbert is really so tempting. And I get it. And I usually want to bank on my developmental staff to not take the tackle in the top 10. Like,
right.
I'm not against it, but I'm not really like pounding the table for it either. But I get it though too. They really needed to upgrade. Now they upgraded probably both tackle spots in one move. They had to get nastier. I do think that they've got to get tougher. I was a little bit surprised that it was, I'm not saying that Alt's not tough, but I did think that there was something to the Latham discussion because he is a bully and he is someone that sets the freaking tone. And that to me was a Harbaugh pick, even though he's maybe not as talented. There is something to say, hey, if we're going to win, we're going to have to beat Kansas City and be more physical. And I think there's something to that. The trench will never let you down if it's good enough. So I don't know. I think this was the most difficult decision in the first round because you're picking between guys and it's so hard because Nabers is probably going to go in or at least be in competitive nature of offensive rookie of the year. Anywhere that he goes, he's going to get the accolades. He's going to be really, really good. And now you're going to trot out some guys, you know, that aren't that good when you're in Los Angeles. Like, even if you get two really good receivers over the next four rounds, chances are, like, they're not going to be Nabers. And putting that much pressure on day two, day three guys is tough. So I don't know that there was a right answer. I think you're kind of kicking yourself either way.
Yeah, I certainly understand where you're coming from with the run on tackle stuff, too. I guess I'm just a wide receiver guy at heart. I definitely just want Justin Herbert to be happy. And I hope that they figure out. I mean, you look at the second round, the top of the second round, and there's quite clearly some teams that are like 100% locked in at wide receiver. So let's talk about that. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about what the rest of the division did in the first round, and then try to pinpoint a little more of what the Browns could do and who could be enticing for them. So we'll be right back. The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find. using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Okay, so let's just quickly hit on the first round selections in the North. You can tell me if you like them, if you dislike them, and we'll try to keep it tidy because I want to spend some time on the Browns here. So let's say starts all the way down at 18. Amarius Mims, obviously huge. The Bengals have three massive offensive tackles now, but this still carries some risk here. The guy hasn't played a ton, and you worry about that above everything. The skill set's there, Ian, but the risk is the person physically, right?
Yeah, probably the biggest boom or bust pick, no matter where he went in this round. It made perfect sense that he went to Cincinnati because they like their big guys. If he's healthy, he might be the best tackle in this class, and that's going to suck for the Browns. But at the same time, man, there's a reason why he was available at that pick, and being that talented, you usually don't fall that far. So I like it, but I think I gave it a B, and it's just because you're banking on the talent. But it's risky. I mean, he could be another Isaiah Wynn type, where, you look at the contributions. I mean, obviously, Wynn had some injury issues, but like, that's part of it, right? Like, availability matters.
Right. Yeah. You're talking 30 games played in college, only 8 starts.
He starts two games in 2022 in the college football playoff and held his own. The film was pretty good. And then six games, he missed six more with a left ankle injury last year. So it's very limited body of work here. But again, physically, in terms of his just sheer body size, like, it's, you know, I get it. You're swinging for the fences here, trying to stop Myles Garrett and TJ Watt and the like. So I understand, but we'll see. The Bengals haven't had a lot of luck with those guys they've been drafting. And I was, you know, the guy I was fearful for them was Brock Bowers ending up there, and I'm glad that didn't come to fruition. They could have gone corner. They definitely need some help there, but they end up going tackle. I get that. Pittsburgh also goes tackle, two straight years of offensive tackles now for Pittsburgh with Choi Fautanu. So I think there's some buzz about he might move off tackle. Like, what's your vibe here? Is he sticking at tackle, or is he moving around for them?
Yeah, I would have to think he sticks at tackle. I would think that Broderick Jones moves over to left tackle. I think that is what I was reading from Pittsburgh folks, is that they think Jones flips over to left tackle, Fautanu goes to right tackle, and then they look for a center somewhere on day two, day three, which makes a lot of sense because that center position for them is awful.
Right.
But Fautanu could play center. He's played every single spot along the line. You know, I don't know if I'd move him to right tackle. I think that's kind of, you know, if Jones is comfortable at right tackle, I wouldn't move around guys too much, but really good player, high floor. He really checks a lot of the boxes. Will he be, you know, an all pro? No, he doesn't have that athleticism, doesn't really have that coordination, but he is very good. And is he someone that I fear if I'm the Browns? Not really. Not when you have Myles Garrett, you're not going to fear him. It's not like Mims, where like if Mims hits his high end, it's like, oh, okay, that's going to be a battle. Fautanu, he's going to hold his own. He's respectable. Good pick for them.
Right. Okay. Good stuff. And then Nate Wiggins, a corner out of Clemson, goes to Baltimore, which needs secondary help. I mean, there's certainly, he's probably a field corner because the body size is small. He's not going to do all too well. Like, I would not think he's a guy who's playing the boundary and jamming physical X receivers in the NFL. So more of a field corner to me, where he's a little more off ball, a little more drop coverage or mirror stuff when he's playing man. But there's a lot to like. I'm curious what you think of him.
Man, I kept mocking this one. This one made so much sense to me. I kept putting him there. They needed a corner so badly, and Marlon Humphrey is the perfect boundary guy. So it's like I think those guys play off each other. I think you're spot on with what you're saying. Comfortable guy, very fast, comfortable in zone, really good awareness. He's a playmaker. So I think you're really putting him in the Marcus Peters role, and he doesn't quite have like those level of ball skills, but he's also not as undisciplined as Peters. He's not going to jump as many routes. So I think they're going to take that balance. They're going to be pretty happy with him, especially with the Browns. It's like, it's, you know, unless if you get like a Keon Coleman type, which those two, when they played, Wiggins held his own, and he gave up like 50 pounds to the dude. So he's a competitive guy. That's not what I would have loved to have seen. There's some athleticism limitations there. Like, he's definitely a cornerback too. Like you say, he's more of a field guy. But you're going to want to avoid him. Like, cross-field throws, if he's lurking, he'll get the ball, and he's got the speed to take it to the house.
Yeah, he can play. It's just a matter of, like, them keeping him in the right spots, and I don't think it's going to be rocket science to figure that out. So, yeah, the division did fine. They did what they normally do. It seems the investment from Pittsburgh, will see if that pays off down the line here with what they're trying to do running the football, what they're trying to do protect these quarterbacks. But they stay away, and we're going to talk a little bit of, like, teams that need wide receivers, because it's packed. Like, you're talking a lot, there's a lot of wide receivers we like at the top of this second round, but, like, I mean, teams I could see, Ian, going wide receiver, Buffalo at the top. I mean, New England could go O-line. There's no doubt that they could take somebody right off the bat O-line, but they could also use weapons help. They have, I mean, come on, man, we're talking about just bare bones there. I mean, Washington could, we have pretty much said that the Chargers will. Tennessee could, because, again, Hop is older, right? You keep scrolling, the Texans could always look to add more weapons for CJ. The Saints, the Raiders, I don't know. The Giants just took one, probably not. But then you start to look at, like, the picks right before the Browns. Philly, Pittsburgh, both, like, Pittsburgh, I thought maybe could take Brian Thomas. I thought that was an option that could be on the table for them. So they're talking, like, George Pickens, and then, like, Quez Walker, it's bad. This is probably, I'm not trying to lock them into a pick here, but it feels like they're going wide receiver there. And then the Eagles are outside of their top two. They're probably looking for a slot type as well, right? Because they're like Paris Campbell and Devontae Parker trying to maybe chase the veteran route there. But it definitely feels like there's some teams here that are going to be running on wide receivers. So I want to hit on just names you like. Obviously, I think there's a volume of wide receivers where there's not such a volume of tackles, but where are you drawn to in terms of like, let's do this. Give me your top 10 available, and then let's sort of try to like hone in on who you think the Browns will sort of have at their beckoning.
More than likely guys that'll be off the board, like Adonai Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman. I think we can probably say they're probably going to be off the board. Definitely by the time the Browns are there. I'd be surprised if any of those guys aren't there or are there. So I think then you're looking at like Roman Wilson out of Michigan, Jalen Polk, Washington, Malachi Corley, Western Kentucky. And then you're starting to really stretch. Maybe Jermaine Burton out of Alabama, Tez Walker from North Carolina.
Right.
Maybe more of a possession guy like Javon Baker, but I do not want to take him in the second round. Jalen McMillan, same thing. I can't stomach taking that guy in the second round. He's a nice player, but no elite traits. So for me, I'm looking heavy on the traits. So I think Wilson, Burton, Walker, and Corley are probably the guys that I would say on this roster could make an impact year one and fill a role moving forward.
The tricky part is like, you get to turn the corner of the first round and you're like, look at these guys available. There's a ton of options. There's Newton and there's Coleman. And there's just so many names you could name here that you're like, oh, I can't believe they got out of the first round. The Browns don't pick until 22. And that is, pick 54 overall. This is like, go back into the first round. If you want to put a comp on like, how long did we have to wait until the Eagles pick Quinyon Mitchell. That was a while that we didn't see a corner go. So this is trickier than you think because they're not even in the 40s. They're in the 50s, and we'll see if they end up even sitting still. So, let's just throw some names that you're drawn to in that range. I mean, let me say some names. You tell me if you think they'll be gone by the time the Browns pick, okay? Because this is – we'll just go off Dane's board because it's right in front of me. So, I mean, I'm not even going to say Johnny Newton. We think he'll be gone. You said McConkey. Marshawn Nealon, do you think he's around or you think he's gone?
Of the edge guys that are still out there, I'm going to guess that he's gone.
Okay. Jenkins, Michigan D tackle.
I think he'll be around.
Okay.
If he's not, it's going to be a similar type of DT.
Keon Coleman?
As much as I want him. And I think he would be like my number one or number two target. I think he'll be gone. I think he might be pick 33.
It's very possible. Kingsley Suamataya.
Oh, I think he'll be gone. Okay. New England makes so much sense for him.
Right. I think that definitely is some of those few early tackles that people will want. All right, let's keep moving. Junior Colson.
I think he'll be there.
Edrin Cooper.
Ooh, probably shouldn't be there.
Okay. Rook Orohorohe.
I think he'll be there. He's a little bit older.
Okay. You said Malachi Corley, Troy Franklin.
I think he'll be gone.
Yeah, then you start to get into like Jalen Polk range and Roger Rosengarten, and those are more coin flippy, right? So
yeah.
Of these names that you see, I know you've mocked the Browns several times. Who do you think is there and who do you think they ultimately lean into? Put you on the spot.
I think the first round went pretty well for Cleveland. Like, there wasn't a Patrick Paul that went in the first round. So that's going to eat up a second round pick. There's more receivers on the board. So I think that bodes pretty well. I think they're going to have a choice of like Michael Hall. If they want, I would like to see a Roger Rosengarten. I think that would be a nice option for them. Blake Fisher. If they can get one of those two guys on the board, I'm going to be really happy. For their potential to get one of them. What I don't want is, well, maybe even a Jatavion Sanders. I know Pete talked about him. I'm a big fan of his too. I think he'd really look nice in this offense. There's a chance. I don't know how teams feel about him.
Sort of look at Cincinnati and you think maybe that's a spot. I don't know. The tight end's so weird, especially
it's a weird round. Spot. Yeah. And it's also weird because they develop so slowly.
Right.
So you've got to have a team that has a little bit of foresight and trust that they're going to be able to play right away. I'm looking at these teams though. It's like, yeah, you've got the teams directly in front and that's my issue range. Like when I was doing these mocks, it's Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and the Rams and Cincinnati is looming too, but like those three teams, and Philadelphia has two picks right in front of Cleveland, they basically have very similar team needs.
Right.
So it's going to be tough. You don't want to give up too much to maybe trade above those teams. If you can package some of those day three picks, maybe that makes sense. But, you know, everyone needs a tackle. Everyone needs a wide receiver. Everyone wants a pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be stuck with like the best of the rest. And I think that's okay because the class kind of lends itself to that, but I'm guessing it might be a versatile lineman. Maybe someone like Dominic Puni who can play tackle or guard. If they can get Blake Fisher, I think that's like the ideal situation for me. Yeah. I would not be upset though if they just take even like a guard. Like the ideal guys, I just have a hard time thinking that the NFL is that different than where I'm thinking, but there's always someone that surprises me.
Right. Yeah, there is. I think we're in alignment that Keon Coleman, if he's not somebody's flavor, is sitting there. That would be a dream selection. Dream selections, Kingsley, if he falls down the board, right, that I think we would feel really good about. Edgerrin Cooper, we would feel really, really good about. That's probably it. Who do you think which team we're looking at this early second round into the middle? Who's your running back team? That's one I'm like trying to do the Saints or sorry, do the Raiders feel like they need to pair somebody at running back? That's the one I'm kind of trying to feel like, where's the first running back coming off the board in this thing?
Yeah, I look at where's the running back and where's Spencer Rattler going? Does Rattler fall to round three?
Right.
We obviously hope that he goes round two. We want the Giants or the Raiders to take him or the right. Saints. If that happens, that's a really nice boost. Running back, though, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even be stunned. I think 40 is too early for Washington.
Cowboys at 56.
I think it's the Cowboys. I think they're the floor. The question is whether someone takes one before them.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I mean, you're talking about the Giants. I think it's the Giants that would be the threat there.
Right.
Maybe they take. I mean, that's the thing. You're listening to DJ and Todd McShay the other day. They were both talking about it. It's like they have totally different top 10 running back rankings. And I think all of us do because it's just not a great class. So maybe you take if the tackles are gone, if the top linebackers are gone, if you're left with a 24-year-old defensive tackle or a running back, I'm probably looking at the running back because right. he's going to help the team more right now. And I do think that that matters. Like this team is built to win right now. They're built to compete right now. You might as well maximize the window.
I'm with it, man. It's going to be fascinating. It's, you know, I wish we could do a little better pinning down who they pick, but it's just 22 picks back in the second round is really challenging to nail. But I think we named every name that feels relatively possible. I will really be bummed if they end up taking somebody that we didn't even remotely mention. I would stink, but I think we've mentioned at least enough at 54 and, you know, then at 85, we'll see. And it's still very much on the table that these guys trade out and move down and, yep. and accumulate something, or even, you know, they could slightly move up. We'll see. They got some back half ammunition and they certainly have ammunition in the back of next draft that they could use to entice some teams with some things throwing, just kind of overwhelming them with volume. But nonetheless, Ian, man, it's late. I'm sorry. I appreciate it. It's great, great insight from you, man. We are happy to have you here when you can join us at the OBR. And I think we're going to get you a little bit on the draft show. So we're looking forward to that, buddy.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. I'll be on, I think, each of the next 2 days for a little bit. So definitely appreciate it.
Right on. Guys, this is a reminder before we split here to check out the OBR's draft coverage. We're doing a live, essentially live show every minute of the draft, trying to just talk through it from Brown's perspective and give overarching thoughts and just have fun, right? That's what we're trying to do ultimately, is to make the draft a bit Brown slanted for you. And we had, you know, I think there were up over 1,500 of you at certain points that were hanging out with us. So that was a great time and we'll have great insight. And it'll be more exciting tomorrow night because the Browns get involved. So hang out with us, YouTube or Twitch. That's the best way to find us. And give us a like and a follow. And if you have not done so yet, please like this podcast by giving it a review. We always appreciate that very much. So a huge thank you to Ian for coming by, hanging out with us and talking through the draft with perspective that I think is pretty damn unique. And then, like I said, he will be on the show the next 2 days as well. So check that out, guys. And then go to the OBR. We'll have everything you need to understand the next day's coverage, including best available, fits that meet the guardrails, fits that don't meet the guardrails, everything you need to educate yourself on this whole thing will all be available for you. So check out the OBR.com, and we have a 60% off membership offer going on right now too. So guys, thanks for making this pod a part of your day whenever you did. Greatly appreciate that. And as I always say, be well, go Browns.